everybody. Thanks for coming. I'd like to call the July 1st meeting of the Energy, Environment, and Sustainability Committee to order. Roll call, please.
Chair Hewitt.
Here.
Deputy Chair Walz.
Here.
Legislator Donaldson.
Here.
Legislator Green.
Here.
Legislator Litz.
Here.
Legislator Nolan. Not here. Legislator Stewart.
Here.
You have a call.
Thank you very much. I would like to read a reminder on meeting structure. Priority is given to committee members for discussion and questions. Resolution sponsors are also given priority. Chair's discretion to open to non-members and the public. Can I have approval of the June 3rd, 2025 regular meeting minutes? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Minutes are approved. We'd like to start today with a presentation by Kevin Raper from H2NY about a potential idea for a hydrogen power feasibility study. And I'll let Kevin take it from here. I met Kevin through Roberto Rivera, who's also on the Zoom. Roberto is on the Environmental Committee of the City of Kingston with Julie Noble and works closely and has been promoting hydrogen for some time. Go ahead, Kevin. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you very much, and I've shared your packet with all the committee members. One reason I wanted to bring the presentation to our committee is to start a conversation again about hydrogen. And if any committee members have a question for me or Kevin, it would be appreciated now. But mostly I'm wondering, Legislator Mana Joe Green is a longtime legislator and environmentalist. And I'm wondering what kind of feedback you've heard about some of the downsides of hydrogen.
I wasn't really prepared to address it. I do have a friend who, on a regular basis, sends me information about why hydrogen is not a good idea. And I just am not prepared to even ask intelligent questions. But I will try to gather that information, and we will be in touch moving forward. You know, what you said makes sense to me. It sounds like the hydrogen is being generated, not using fossil fuel. So that's a good step in the right direction.
Thank you, Legislator Green. Legislator Walz.
I have one quick question and one quick comment. The question is, Kevin, what is your background? Do you have a chemical engineering? I mean, what type of background do you have?
There's designing stuff like that. I just started to get more involved in some.
Thanks. My brief comment is. Sure. My brief comment is, I think any forms of energy have their upside and downside, and sometimes you just have to look at them all and say, you know, which is the lesser of the evils. Thank you.
Thank you. Legislator Stewart.
In your packet that you provided us with, you mentioned that you're partnering with SUNY. I mean, do you have that relationship? Do you have a relationship with either SUNY Ulster or SUNY New Paltz? Or?
Not yet, no.
Okay. So it's not like they signed on to your idea or anything like that yet?
Not this one.
Okay. Thank you for that.
And you'll see on the last page is the example that's being used in Ithaca. So for now, this is a preliminary presentation, and we'll see where it goes. Any other questions?
Well, I was just going to comment. I think this sounds, even though I know next to nothing about this, I think this sounds more appealing than the lithium ion battery facility that is proposed for the town of Ulster. So thank you for your presentation. We appreciate it.
Legislator Donaldson.
Thank you.
I know about the downside.
Can you use your mic, please?
I know about the downside of lithium batteries. What is the downside of hydrogen?
I think that's what we're going to start looking into, because I don't want to put anyone on the spot tonight. Because I just started learning about the downsides. Unless anyone in the audience is prepared to answer. Okay, we'll wait till next month. Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you,
Roberto. See you soon.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. And now on to reports. Director Ryder, do you have a report on the Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency?
Sure. So the last reports that I have, because I'll get more reports, like our hauling numbers and everything, tomorrow for May, but we're a month behind to our board, and so I don't have those yet. But I'll just give you the first kind of third of the year, because that's through April. So through April for MSW and C&D, we had a total of 41,048 tons. So if you were to multiply that out by three, which doesn't really work because the early part of the year is our slowest part of the year, but that would be only 123,000 tons or so, 124,000 tons. Our target is 142, so we will make up ground on that. But definitely, like, we are looking at these numbers as we venture into budget time, which we've already started working on the budget for next year, and we'll start solidifying everything now. I think what you'll see is that we're definitely going to be lowering our target numbers from 142, because last year we weren't there, and it doesn't look like we're going to get there this year likely. That will in and of itself raise the tipping fee slightly, because if you're spreading all expenses over 142,000 tons and instead you're spreading all expenses over 130 something thousand tons, each one of those tons gets more expensive, right? So that will cause us a need to increase on top of that. In our contracts with Seneca Meadows and the transportation companies, we are also seeing increases of somewhere from the bidding documents of 5%-ish, and we have collective bargaining agreements that are up at the end of this year. So we will see an increase again of tipping fees. I do not anticipate that it will be anywhere near what you saw last year, which was taking it from $115 a ton to $135. I will share, like, our neighbors. So Orange County has a tipping fee of $130 a ton. They are county. They don't have flow control. They do about 80,000 tons of MSW and C&D, and they charge towards the property tax $1.5 million. To the property tax to offset increasing the tipping fee. So they would really be around 140. When I say 135, we also have a fuel surcharge that runs around 6%. So that could be anywhere from $7 to $8 increase. So our functional tipping fee right now is about $143 a ton for MSW and C&D. I would say Orange County's, when you take that tax into consideration, functional is about $140 a ton. Sullivan County is $137 for MSW and $150 for C&D. They have flow control on recycling C&D debris and MSW. Ours is only on MSW. So $137 and $150, and they bill their taxpayers about $2 million. So that would be even higher if not offset by that. Just a reminder that the agency has not received any taxpayer money since before 2012 when flow control came through. There was a time where we got a Climate Smart Communities grant, but that was all flow through from the state. So yes, we're a little bit higher than Orange County, but not what the taxpayers are paying. We've been focused on the Repower project, so the Reuse Innovation Center, going back and forth on a lease for a facility there. At this month's board meeting, I am asking the board to create the position of reuse coordinator and approve a salary for that. We are also going out to RFP for an operator of the hub and spoke system. Hope to have the lease ready for the August meeting. We're just going back and forth with the property owner, so that would be for the hub. You know, I will say there is some concern from some town supervisors about the spoke system. And I have said multiple times, I believe here and other places, that in the hauling contracts with the towns, in order to meet both the compost organics diversion goals set by the county executive and county executive order one, and just to do diversion in order to stop things from the landfill, that in our hauling contracts with the towns, there will be some kind of requirement for them to divert food waste and also bulky items and reusable goods. If we're expected to do it, this is an all of government effort, and we're going to need the towns to work on that. The board and the agency is willing to provide things like Tioli sheds, take it or leave it, sheds and in vessel. You know, you have in front of you tonight a resolution to approve some grant applications. We're working with the county executive's office on a Climate Smart Communities grant. which is one of those that would fund us being able to provide in-vessel compost processing capabilities for all of the town MRDCs. It would take minor staff time for them to implement that process. We also plan on hiring a vendor that will go pick up reusable goods from the Teoli sheds that aren't taken or left, you know, by the community and bring it back down to the hub. So we are all in on both of these efforts, and we just hope that the town and the town supervisors will join us and the county as well. I don't have a lot else to report. Happy to answer any questions.
Wonderful. Thank you. Legislator Stewart?
I was going to ask, so what is the pushback that you're receiving from the supervisors?
That they don't believe that this effort will, that they don't want to see the tipping fee go up because of this effort, and that they don't believe that it will be successful in diverting waste. In some, I'm paraphrasing a letter from one.
Thanks.
Any other questions? Is there
actually just kind of a follow-up to what I just asked a moment ago? So the situation in Hurley, I mean, if that's still a work in progress, and I mean, if that were to prove feasible, how do you feel about that being used as a model for other transfer stations around the county?
So I think there's a lot of ifs in your question, right?
So
there's a lot of hypotheticals. I think the company that's doing the work is a great partner when it comes to composting and other things. I've not yet seen results. It has not been fully funded as a pilot as far as like what is necessary. I think when you look at any kind of results that I have seen, the per ton or the amount that it actually would take to implement that on a county-wide level is a significant amount of money that I think it would be incumbent upon the county to help support as well. This is not something the agency is willing to take from pilot to, like, it's, you know, I think it's a laudable goal that Hurley's looking at.
Right.
And again, assuming all of your hypotheticals come through, then sure, if it was at the right price, I think we could recommend it on a larger scale. But there's a lot of things that are left to be seen.
Thank you.
Legislator Green?
As long as we're talking about Hurley, could you update us on the leachate situation?
Yeah, so I have seen some results. They have not been provided to me by the town supervisor, but they were provided secondhand. They, I will say, looked encouraging. It's really hard to tell, but like the results were taken from the tank and showed a bunch of chemicals that were present in the leachate, and then the process went through. And then you saw a lot of not detected. You did see one or two elements where certain chemicals like PFAS still existed and was still above the regulated threshold. Now, the company that Hurley was working with the pilot on, they offer like three different levels. And what they were showing Hurley was kind of the initial level, which would be for a countywide system. Let's say we placed it at the Kingston Wastewater Treatment Plant or at the Town of Ulster Landfill and transported all the waste, all the leachate to that location and treated it on site. It's about $1 million, which is reasonable, like as far as what these I need to see a little bit more. What I will say is we've engaged, again, prior to this, an engineering firm to help us deal with our two landfills. Through either reverse osmosis or a similar type of system. They've gotten quotes. I'm actually meeting with them tomorrow, so I'm going to be able to provide the board, the next board meeting, a little bit. They're going to come in and present to the board next week. It's Thursday. We'll have a little bit more information. The timing didn't work out to where I could have that meeting before coming here, but I'm optimistic that there's a solution that, I mean, there has to be a solution. We have to deal with it somehow, but that is not going to be, you know, out of the realm of possibilities to fund.
Yeah, just a follow-up on, you know, it seems to me that, well, it's good that we have flow control and that the agency hasn't had to come to the legislature for a net service fee, but it almost seems like a perverse incentive that in order to balance the budget, the agency has to get waste. And I'm just wondering if analysis has been done, if we divert either through a reuse innovation center or expanded composting, recycling, waste reduction, et cetera, the savings, would the savings from waste diversion balance out the cost of not sending it to Seneca Meadows?
Yeah. So a couple of things. It depends on what you're talking about as far as waste diversion. Again, we do our budget based on a target tons, which is unfortunate. I agree with you that 98% of our budget is funded by a tipping fee. We are working with leadership of the county on potentially looking at ways, like, so both we've talked to people in the legislative leadership and in the executive's office on methods of funding the agency that don't solely involve tipping fees. It would probably require a home rule request so that we could put something like a user fee on the county tax roll. Those conversations are ongoing. I know there's concerns of it appearing to raise property taxes and other things because it's going on the same bill. But if we were able to have, like, Rockland County, for instance, has a user fee, and so not everything is funded through the tipping fee. If we were able to, let's say, fund our HHW costs, which is about $160,000 a year for a small, I mean, it's important to get those chemicals out, but we, last year we collected about 42 tons of HHW. If we are able to fund the town's recycling program, which is essentially our dual stream MRF, which costs us $2 a ton or about $260,000, in order to run neutral on that, we would have to charge the towns $40 a ton, which we don't do. Right now, it just goes towards the tipping fee. So if we are able to fund that and fund our recycling outreach team and fund our administrative functions that don't have to do with taking our waste, so our T&D and our fuel and our operations team that actually loads up the trucks, if we are able to fund everything through a user fee and then just leave the tipping fee on transportation, disposal, fuel, operations costs, you'd see a lower tipping fee and you would see an incentive that didn't harm us when we lost funds to diversion. Now, if part of the Repower project is to build a secondary diversion building on our site, which would require a change in our DEC permit, which would mean we would get the waste over the scale and get paid for it, and then instead of sending it to a landfill, we would divert it to the hub. Then we'd save about $100 a ton. But any diversion that comes that happens before the scale, so people who take materials that they would have brought to us, whether it be construction and demolition debris or bulky items like furniture and reuse, anytime they take that directly to the hub, we lose roughly $30 to $35 a ton in those other costs. So, because that's what's worked into our tipping fee that isn't, you know, it isn't, that's not including the operation. So in that $35 is also our staff who works in operations. It's everything except our contract for transportation, our contract for disposal, and our fuel costs. So that's about $100 a ton. We charge $135. So anytime we divert, right, and it doesn't come to us at all, it goes directly to the hub or it goes elsewhere, we lose $35 a ton that we budget as receiving.
Let the record show that Legislator Nolan has arrived. Also, I have Legislator Litz next, but I want everyone to know that Legislative Counselor Rigucci only has 9 minutes left, and I want to talk about the contract before he leaves. Legislator Litz?
Just one quick thing. Are you talking about a user fee? How would that be structured? Would that be a tax or?
So it's not tax, it's a fee. Our enacting statute already gives us the authority to charge fees other than just a straight tipping fee, but the mechanism to get it on the county property tax bill, which would be what we would need a home rule request for, is not there. So, I mean, technically we could charge this user fee now. We would have to hire a staff of about 20 in order to enforce and collect the user fee, but it's use and availability. So with flow control of MSW, everybody has to bring their waste to us, whether they go to a town MRDC or they have a hauler, everything comes to us for MSW. We also have recycling availability and all these other services. So it would be on the property tax bill, but it would not be a tax.
Follow-up question?
So right now, at least in my town, you pay a $75 fee to be able to go to the transfer station and $5 a bag for everything you drop off. So, and then you're going to charge a user fee on top of that. Isn't that sort of like double jeopardy?
So your town bases those charges off of the tipping fee because they pay $135 a ton plus $95 a pull charge. Assuming we were able to get a user fee, the tipping fee would go down and your fee at the town transfer station would likely go down. That's just their expenses and it's their staff costs.
I mean, I understand that, but if we're going to, you know, change, if you're going to go to home rule and apply a tax, I mean, you're already paying, so you got to figure that out. You shouldn't be paying twice.
Can we move on to the contract conversation? Legislator Stewart, go ahead.
Real quick. So the people who would be paying this possible fee, would that be like all taxpayers in Ulster County, or would that only be people who take their garbage to transfer station?
No, it would be all. It would be on – it would be a fee based either ad valorem or – through the property tax. I mean, but again, it would be a fee based on value of property or just per parcel. Rockland County actually does both because they have various fees. So some of them they do ad valorem, some of them they do on a per unit basis. If I could just jump back to answer the last statement, like, so everybody's charged a 911 surcharge, but you also pay for a telephone bill. It's apples to oranges. Like, one is a user fee for our operations. Your town transfer station, you would not, that's you, that's the use of your town transfer station, which is why you get charged that fee. You could bring on Saturdays your waste to us directly. We accept residents on Saturdays, and all you would pay is the tipping fee. Right now you pay some equivalent of that to the town, but you also pay for their staff.
Thank you, Director Ryder. Legislative Counselor Rigucci, you and I spoke earlier today. I want to have this conversation during the reports instead of during the resolutions to get a high-level view of the contract negotiation. Can you tell me, when I spoke to Director Ryder earlier, he believes we could vote in favor of the contract today and move it forward, but I want to make sure everyone has read the changes and knows what has changed. So we've invited Legislative Counselor Rigucci to give us a highlight.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just by way of background, we had a meeting last week with Director Ryder, Deputy LaValle, the chair, counsel for both the Minority Caucus and myself, as well as Mr. Johnson from the County Attorney's Office. And during the meeting, it was discussed that an amendment would be crafted that would provide a mechanism by which the legislature would have some notice of any intent to bond by the agency in excess of a specific amount. Director Ryder was kind enough to put together some language that was forwarded to us, and then I forwarded it on to the members of this committee. And the language sets forth in sum that the agency, if it should intend to bond in excess of $40 million, would provide written notice of such intent to the legislative body. The legislature thereafter would have an opportunity to debate and, if it so chose, to vote on whether to approve or not approve of such bonding. In the event that the legislature deems not to approve any such bonding, then the agency would have the opportunity by a two-thirds vote, I believe, of the board to go ahead and approve the bonding. In short, that's the language that was set forth. I had circulated it to the members of our committee for some comment, and I did receive some comments back, but that is the present version of the amendment.
Thank you very much.
Can I add just a couple of brief things? So in the meeting that we met, one thing that was brought up is like, what would, so the $40 million didn't come out of nowhere. That was the actual amount that was in the 92 agreement before the 2015 amendment. There was conversation on what that would mean in 2025 dollars. And a quick Google search during that meeting discovered that that would be about $91 million. I'm not seeking, nor is the agency board seeking $91 million. As far as this letter to intent, we decided that it was fair to keep it at $40 million. And much of this language is similar to what the prior contract had for a budget year. I included language that would say within 30 days, and I get that maybe we could tweak that to even a little bit longer, maybe 60. But to oppose it as opposed to approve it, because like similar language in the prior contract, silent approval would happen after the 30 or 60 days. So really the legislature would only need to act if they had an issue and wanted to oppose the bond, right? So passing a resolution opposing the bond would then trigger a need to have a supermajority, which right now would be 4/5 of the board based on the numbers that I gave you, to vote in the affirmative in order to approve the override and continue to bond. Again, this is with or without a net service fee, which is really the only tie-in. So there is language in the amendments that I sent that says if flow control is rescinded in some way, that then a net service fee would come back into effect. And we could talk about how that would happen. But I had just incorporated Article 4 of the previous agreement as a way to do it. This is a separate amendment that would allow the legislature to weigh in regardless of whether there was a net service fee or not. This is not a cap, which again, we don't believe is breaking.
Thank you. Legislator Litz and then Nolan.
Yeah, I don't know when this amendment was made, but I haven't seen a single copy of Resolution 209. It wasn't sent to me. I didn't get the packet for this meeting. All I got was an invitation to the meeting. So I don't know what I would be voting on tonight.
Good point. Did anyone else see the amendments? Thank you.
I received mine yesterday, I believe. And I have not had a chance to really study it.
Okay. Legislator Nolan and then Green.
So I appreciate the effort to try to work this out. Some of what is being proposed as a mechanism to give the legislature a role here seems to me to be more hortatory than effective. That is, it kind of gives us a way to express pleasure or displeasure. that I think that we already require a supermajority of the board to vote on bonding issues at the UCRA. So I don't think that gives us anything extra. And I really don't understand this whole exercise, because the resolutions and contracts that we've had for quite some time to govern the relationship between the agency and the legislature have worked very well. And they contained in it a mechanism that gave the legislature a way to impose a cap. Now, that may not have been enforceable if that was illegal, but I don't believe it's illegal, and it's never been tested in court and shown to be illegal. So I don't, and the agency doesn't seem to want to bond for outrageous amounts. So it seems like we are going through an exercise based on a legal interpretation that there may be, not for sure is, but may be an unconstitutional or illegal provision in this document that both the agency and the county, I shouldn't say just the legislature, the county have lived by very happily for many, many years. So our belief that we could do that may have been illusory, but these amendments also seem to me to be illusory in terms of really giving the legislature any meaningful role here. The legislature can express its disapproval, and then that can be overridden, and the agency can go on to do what it wants to do. I don't find that acceptable. And I don't see amendments that you could be headed towards that would address my concern, which is I would like that to be in the contract, and for both the agency and the county, maybe not to know whether it's legally enforceable, but that would put constraints on both behaviors. So it's like mutual deterrence here, I think, is what I would be arguing for.
I think we have a direct response from Director Ryder first, and then Legislator Green.
So I think part of what happens is there's this big confusion over bonds, because county legislators are used to going out to bond for general obligation bonds and municipal requirements under county finance law and all these other things. There is no requirement for a supermajority for the agency to bond. We can pass a bonding resolution through a simple majority. I will add that we cannot buy general obligation bonds. We can only bond for revenue bonds, which is a whole different story. And we are required to send our bond indenture to the state comptroller, who then approves that bonding. So we have a layer of approval that we can't just go out and from language of prior meetings and other things, this is not a direct response to Legislator Nolan, because he did not indicate that, but that we can willy-nilly go out and bond whatever we want, and that we're going to do so. There's several layers of approval. Now, in the meeting on Monday, what was brought up was, without a net service fee, that minority counsel believed that was not enforceable or legal to have a bonding cap on the agency. I'm trying to bring in an amendment that I believe would satisfy some legislature's desires to share in the decision-making process of the agency when it comes to bonds, but not have a cap without having a net service fee. The agency over the last several years has waived certain requirements in the formula. Otherwise, we would have a net service fee every single year. We've chosen not to do that. There's a certain buildup of reserves and other things that we've waived in order to not bill the county a net service fee. I suppose if it's the will of the legislature to reimpose all of these things and have a net service fee included, there could be a conversation with the agency board about then reinstituting some kind of cap. But again, at that point, we're probably not going to sit and waive all of these requirements, and I don't know whether the board would fully on board with that. But I don't think we need to get there. We are trying to take away the risk of the county of a net service fee, but also have a little bit of autonomy with the agency.
Thank you. Legislator Green?
Yeah, I agree with Legislator Nolan. If it's not broken, don't fix it. And I absolutely think that the agreement that we had in place made sense. It evolved from before flow control through flow control. And I still believe that ultimately the county, the legislature, is the deep pockets of last resort. But I also want to point out that up until now, there haven't been the kind of large expenses that the agency will be facing. For example, if we do move forward with appropriately siting a landfill so that we don't have to be shipping our waste and we're practicing maximum waste diversion and local self-reliance, that's going to be a very large expense. Even moving forward with a high-functioning reuse innovation center and the system that that includes, those are larger expenses than the now $11 million a year to export our waste. So it is a somewhat different ball game, but I do think that there should be a relationship between the agency who essentially is being contracted to manage the waste in the county, and that the legislature should, that there should be a bonding cap that the legislature would need to approve. But I think all of that will work when we are actually working together to find those solutions. Enough said.
Thank you. And as we've heard, we haven't had enough time to review all of the materials. I'm sure Council Rigucci can answer any questions. If you have to leave, feel free. I have Legislator Collins and then Nolan.
I just want to make sure that my understanding is accurate. So in the previous contract, when it was set up, there was a net service fee, and that net service fee, in my understanding, made the county liable if a bond was not paid off by UCRRA. Under the current...
No. There was no... It was very clear in both the enacting statute that the bonds of the agency are not the responsibility of the county. But our ability to pay the bonds could then be subsidized through our next budget. Like, we would have to bond to pay for it. And even if our revenues didn't meet our expenses, we would bill the county and service fee. So in essence, the cost of paying off the bonds, but let's say we disappeared, the bonds would not become the liability of either the county or the state.
Okay, so that's actually even more clear to me now. So given that the county has no liability for any UCRA bonds, why does the county feel like we should be able to force them to get approval from us? That doesn't make sense to me.
Legislator Nolan?
That's an interesting framing. I think that there's enough issues that are in front of us and enough that we need to think through that we should postpone this for a month. And I make that motion.
We're actually in reports right now, we'll get to resolution soon. I just wanted
withdraw
to
draw that.
So I think we will wrap this up and we'll be having this conversation in about 15 minutes. Councilor Rigucci, thank you very much. Yep. And now we'll hear about renewable energy implementation, a brief update from Legislator Green.
We had hoped to actually bring forward the full set of recommendations at this meeting, but I'm going to ask that we postpone that. But one of the things that I think is outstanding is that we really need to hire someone to work with the municipalities to move forward on renewable energy. There is a renewable energy working group that is working directly with the town of New Paltz, their climate task force, and it's moving, and with Central Hudson, who is the utility for this area, to move forward a series of projects that includes the Government Operations Center, now the Emergency Communication Center, and several other projects that could be as much as 20 megawatts of renewable energy. And it really, we're making steady progress, I think. Deputy Laval might agree, she's participated in those meetings. And it's a wonderful model for other municipalities. Regardless of what happens with Central Hudson in the future, that pattern is set of how, or is being developed for how the utilities can work directly with the municipalities where renewable energy and possibly battery storage will be sited. And in particular, I want to be sure that the county facility has battery storage, so it can microgrid off if the grid goes down and still provide the safety that it was built and intended to provide. So, but the other thing really is, and I say this out of my personal experience when I was county recycling coordinator, the way we took our recycling rate from 4% to 40% in a decade was that there was someone bringing everyone together to share information and build upon that. And if we kind of just leave it to how it happens, I sit in on the town supervisors meetings, and a lot of their focus is on budget and how to bring money in and how to pay the bills. It might not be on climate solutions, but we're all going to live with the results of our action now into the future. And one person focusing and helping each municipality make their next step, as New Paltz is very actively doing and some other municipalities are. And so that is a major recommendation, but there are quite a few others, and we'll spend more time on it in a really organized way. And I'd like to also invite some of the team members to participate next month.
Sounds wonderful. Thank you. Okay, moving on to resolutions. Resolutions for the July 15th, 2025 legislative session. Resolution number 470 of 2024, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 10 of 2024, a local law amending the code of the County of Ulster, Chapter 205, Food Service, Article 2, Use of Disposable Polystyrene Foam to include thermoform plastic, to be held on Tuesday, August 19th, 2025 at 7 p.m. Legislator Nolan.
So I'm happy to move this for discussion. I'd also like to record my vote as a yes on the minutes for the prior meeting.
Great. Do I have a second for discussion?
I'll second.
Donaldson is the second. Nolan is first. Yes.
So I think that we're have a unified goal, but I'm concerned about how we're going about this. I sent to the chair this afternoon information that I was putting together. This resolution, by adding thermoform plastic, to me adds a term that is not well defined, and that arguably includes every form of recyclable plastic.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be that the sponsors are wanting to ban all plastics in restaurants in Ulster County, but that's a big jump from where we were previously. So I don't think that's the case. So what I was requesting, and I like to request of this group, is that we form some mechanism to find the plastics that are the most toxic and the least necessary. There's a group out in Boulder, Colorado that has that as their avowed goal. They're called EcoCycle, and they've gone through looking at all of the resin codes. Those are the numbers that show up on the plastic items, with identifying which ones are the worst. And polystyrene, which we addressed first, is at the top of their list. Next after that is black plastic, and I'm particularly concerned about black plastic because it's toxic. It's got in it toxic things. So we don't necessarily have to do that one next, but I think we should get together and go through what we believe about the toxicities and the greenhouse gas implications of each of the things we could regulate to form that list of what's most toxic and least necessary, as well as looking at, I'd like us to put together as a committee, the list of the alternatives for the containers. And if we put together a really good list of alternatives, we might be able to do as the chair, I think, would like, and ban several plastics at once. But I think we should have that list of alternatives first, and then I'd like to have the things that I'm most concerned about get on the list of what we might do and not just try to do it with a generic term, which I believe thermoform plastic is. So for that reason, I don't think that this law is ready to go to public hearing yet.
Thank you. And when you sent me the links earlier, I said, oh, no, more information. But it was very helpful, and I read through all the links, and I created an amendment that at first I thought, let's wait another month, let's get it tighter, but you might like the amendment that I made today. It could be too soon, and we could wait a month, but I think we all got it, local law number 10. On the second page, you'll see in the section 3 that just by adding the word clamshell in four sections, we may address the legislative intent. Because I went to UCRA earlier today, I'm continuing to learn about what's happening at the MRF, what's happening at other facilities. And what they're focusing on is the hinge and the thing that clicks together as clamshell and it gets removed quickly because it's so identifiable. The black plastic, you're right, was number 2 in toxicity, but I learned that it's still recyclable. You can make it into other black plastics. So when you shared with me, it's still toxic, but when you shared with me the different categories of numbers, I saw that pool noodles and baby pools and different things were being listed as examples, but those aren't in the restaurant industry. The purpose of this is to get restaurants to change their buying patterns. And I agree, we need comparables that are affordable. Aluminum is an example with those little lids that don't have any plastic on them. And so I think that we're ready to move forward for public hearing with the term clamshell in order to address the restaurant industry, which is what the polystyrene did in 2014. They tried to eliminate not even the polystyrene peanuts because that's packaging, but more like to-go containers specifically. So my thought was by adding the words clamshell, food service ware, it might address our concerns. Director Ryder had his hand up and then Legislator Stewart.
I mean, I'd be careful. There are recyclable clamshells, right? But when you take into account like the thermoform, which again is the way it's created and it's the brittle type. And so there might be a few thermoform plastics that could possibly be recyclable, but the vast majority of them would be here. But what I heard Legislator Nolan want is a comprehensive approach, and it made me think of the state, which unfortunately was unable to pass the Packaging Reduction and Recycling Infrastructure Act. But you could start
I'm not suggesting necessarily that you take that whole bill on, but you could start by outlawing the 17 toxic plastic chemicals that were in Freya and include them in this legislation. That's probably going to go further than you want, but those were in there for a reason, and they are the 17 most toxic, and then you'd have a little bit more of a comprehensive approach.
I think that that's a great idea. Thank you.
Yeah.
Legislator Stewart.
I was just wondering, I mean, I totally appreciate, you know, the goal that we're working towards, and I kind of like the idea that Director Ryder just mentioned. I'm still having some issues with enforcement on this. And I mean, how is this going to be different than when we passed a bag ban? I mean, we don't have anyone going out to local grocery stores to make sure they're following that. I'm not aware of any fines ever actually being levied against any company who ignores those. And you know, and then we also had like the, I know that in the town of Marbletown we had a plastic straw ban, and you know, it's the same sort of thing. So I'm just wondering, like, how are we going to deal with that issue? And I know that, you know, we have the idea of maybe the Department of Health, you know, doing inspections when they're inspecting these restaurants to see if they're to-go containers are compostable. But again, I mean, they have a lot of other stuff on their plate too. So it's the whole enforcement aspect that I find problematic. And I was wondering if you can explain how we are addressing that issue as it relates, you know, as it has been done previously with these other incidents.
I'll answer quickly. I was reminded when Legislator Green talked about going from 4% to 40%. At that time, there was a lot of education around recycling in the 90s. We haven't seen much education lately. And so people are still going on that old education. Maybe it's about education in restaurants. So it's a lot of work to do. Legislator Nolan?
Yeah. Well, we passed three laws that dealt with this, and one of them was polystyrene. It's been uniformly successful, and it had no enforcement built in. I mean, I haven't gone back to review the enforcement provisions of them, but I'm assuming they're similar. The plastic bag law, we have everywhere I go, I'm getting charged for 5 cents for a paper bag, which is what was in that law. And there's almost every store that I shop in has reusable bags that are available for sale instead. I think there's been a very good cultural shift based upon our having passed those laws and done the educational outreach, which is the biggest part of this. So if you have to try to enforce something like this, you can't pay enough people to go around and do it. You have to get the cultural buy-in. I don't think we got that with the plastics, with the skip the straw, partly because I think it was added on and was a little bit of a, you know, kind of afterthought, and so it didn't have as much of a focus. I think this committee should look at re-bringing forward that law. Either we change the law to make it a better law, add in enforcement if we think that would help, but I think we just need to use what was a pretty good law but do a much better educational outreach around it, maybe around the same time we do a food service plastic ban. So I think it's worth looking at enforcement, but it's not the major way that a lot of these environmental shifts happen. There probably were some traffic tickets written for not wearing your seatbelt back in the day when Ralph Nader changed the world. But most, and the society changed the world, and the insurance companies, when they started saying anybody who's a decent citizen should be wearing their seatbelt. And so we're still doing that at least until 2025 so far, despite the fact that it's a regulation of people's private spaces. I don't think that this law is ready to go forward because I think a lot of, even with the amendment proposed, because a lot of the whereases use this term about thermoform plastic, and the executive director, UCRA, used it that way as well. What I've seen, and I tend to look for stuff that's based on chemistry, is that 80% of the plastic that's out in the world is thermoform. It means it's been steam or heat or somehow pressed into a shape. And so I think using that language without some more care in this document doesn't help us. I think we want to be right on the chemistry of this stuff as we go forward. I love the idea of working with Beyond Plastics and asking them maybe to help us. And I think Judith Inc. and her team would be very happy to do it, might do a Zoom meeting with us, for example, of what we could take from the PREA law that was put forward and bring to us. And I should say in relationship to that, that in a volunteer role that I have with health professionals, I have advocated for that law at the state level. I don't think it presents a conflict because it was all volunteer work, but I'll look at that.
Thank you. Deputy Executive Lavelle.
Just a couple of clarifying points. Both the styrofoam ban and the plastic bag ban at the county level were preempted by state legislation. The plastic bag in 2020, which then the state rollout was delayed during COVID. Ulster County's actually has not opted into the additional paper bag or reusable bag charge, just FYI. If any store is charging you for that bag, they are pocketing that money, using it to offset the increased cost of typically those bags versus a plastic bag. That's something that the county can look at. There are several counties that have opted into the bag fee, which further that money, actually, I believe all of it or close to all of it would come back to the county to help offset costs of reusable bags, various other initiatives around recycling. I think it's really worth thinking about the PREA, and also because you remember that both the styrofoam and plastic bag were passed at the county level. The governor came to Ulster County to sign the state bag bill because Ulster County was one of the communities that led on that topic. So again, there is something that happens, and we've unfortunately seen that the PREA has not been able to kind of make it. Unfortunately, and really you need that type of action at the state. And just the last thing was that I believe, I certainly remember for plastic bag, and I think so also with styrofoam, there was a subcommittee of the Environment Committee that took that on in order to do that in a separate working group and get everybody around the table, bring in other folks with other kind of information. So what was put forward was informed by all that experience and knowledge.
Wonderful. Thanks. I'll put that together with Legislator Nolan. Legislator Green?
Yes. First of all, I want to say that the real deficit in enforcement and education, I think, are around the food waste reduction and diversion. And I think there's a fairly simple solution. I've said it before. I'm going to repeat it because I think it's worth implementing, and that is that the various departments and the agency and the legislature work with, for example, the chamber to do a food waste composting expo and bring good examples and have the vendors all there and make it accessible. And I did hear the director say that it may involve less food waste generating businesses than we originally thought, and maybe that law should be extended to, right now it's a half a ton, which is 1,000 pounds, maybe 500 pounds, a quarter of a ton. But I was at one of those buffets, and I guarantee they do 500 pounds, if not 1,000 pounds a week, because people take more than they are going to be able to finish, because it's all one price, and the amount of waste that's generated. So I just think that there's a real opportunity there. But the reason I wanted to speak to this I wanted to actually read the language, because I think it's important that the definition of thermoform plastic, any plastic comprised of thermoform polymer belonging to the polyolefin family, thermoform plastics are generally used to make yogurt containers, ketchup bottles, drinking straws, food crates, microwave-safe trays, and food storage containers. I think this is going to be a hard one to see through because it doesn't a lot of it has to do with what the alternatives are. But when I think about how much frozen food or how much food is now packaged for microwave, I think we may have faced some lawsuits from those industries, et cetera.
I want to thank you for reading that.
I very much like to see us be able to do this. I want to either have something be recyclable or ban it.
I think the reason I'm happy you read that definition is I was discussing it with legislative staff earlier. That's not saying all those things are banned. The next section says what's banned. That's saying, and that's the issue. The yogurt containers, the ketchup bottles, those are all recyclable. Those aren't the problem. It's the clamshells that are brittle.
Yeah. Okay.
So, but that is confusing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Legislator Stewart?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm good.
Good. Legislator Litz, and then Nolan, and then Walz.
Yeah. We're trying to define what is recyclable, what's not recyclable, what's good, what's bad, clamshells, and all of those things. Why don't we just pare it down and make a very simple law that says all of your clamshells for takeout must be either recyclable or compostable. They're all stamped on the bottom with a number. And that number, 1 through 5 or 7, I forget what the nomenclature is at the moment, but the ones that are not recyclable or compostable should not be allowed. Very It'd nice. Be a very simple law and very short.
Nice. Thank you very much. Legislator Nolan, then Wall. Go ahead, Legislator Nolan.
I like the direction of that. I think that there are claims for recyclability that are made on behalf of some plastics that are arguable, and it becomes a question of whether it's recyclable at great cost or at great temperatures. We might need to refine it, but I think focusing on we're banning the shape, if the shape is the heart of the problem, and then some nuance around recyclability or compostability. The reason I put up my hand was to ask about the shape. Are there clamshells that are coming into the agency now that if they were cut in half so that they didn't have that hinged shape, would they then be able to be recycled because the material they're made of is not the problem, but their shape is the problem? Is it both? Either or, what makes them such a problem?
Yeah, so it's not like the shape is a problem for recycling. Thermoform, so it's the way that they are created. With the thermoform, there's a mold that's set, and then basically plastics are injected into the mold, and it's a brittle, whereas other plastics, the mold is set, and then the plastics or whatever the material sets around the mold. So it's the way that it's created that makes them not recyclable. So the vast majority of clamshells are not recyclable. So
That's where it starts, and that's where it's the thermoform versus the therma, and it's falling out of my head. But that's where the thermoform is the issue. Now, I think there's debate even amongst my staff whether those are debatable, or there's debate amongst my staff on the black plastics. You heard one thing from a staff member today. I think there's others that would have told you something different. And if you're, you know, so now luckily we have a very low technology MRF, right? So a lot of the issues with black plastic comes around, hey, you can't make anything but black plastic out of it. So it's very unmarketable. We have to separate it. And B, we don't have the same, a lot of times at the high technology MRFs, you have the eyes, the visual AI technology, they can't read the black plastic. So in the single stream, I mean, I would say don't set a law based on what comes to us, because that we have a dual stream recycling MRF that handles 6,000 out of 24,000 tons of recycling, right? We handle less than a quarter of all the recyclables in the county. Now, we do dual stream because the majority of what we're able to recycle, we have smaller residues. 25% of single stream recyclables that are collected end up in a landfill. So, and then the argument is that it's a lot easier to collect the single stream recycling. I will just tell you, when I've done the recycling rates of the haulers, I find that very hard to believe, because they're in the low teens. So if single stream is so much easier to collect, why are they not collecting a lot of recyclables compared to MSW?
I have two more speakers on the list, and then I will be moving to postpone. Legislator Walz.
I support this as it is, although I would consider adding those 17 chemicals that were cited earlier. I think it's important not just to get it done, but to get it done right, or to get it done as best we can.
Thank you very much. Legislator Stewart.
So one of the issues that I'm having on Section 3, in the paragraph A, it talks about no chain food service establishments sell or otherwise provide prepared food or disposable food service in polystyrene foam or thermoform plastic. Then we talk about food service establishments in B too.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you're talking about chain food services, I mean, so Ulster County is going to go tell Burger King what they can do.
I think that's why it was broken out, because during the polystyrene period, they were giving the chain restaurants the chance to show up and speak.
I just can't imagine that they are going to be receptive to this.
They were. They did. They complied, and they actually were easier to work with in many cases than the little local shop.
Well, that's great to hear. I find that really surprising, because I figured that their lawyers would say, well, this is, you know, violates the trade clause, the interstate trade clause.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we discussed it, and we were all of the same position that you're articulating. And then it turned out that Burger King can send in millions or billions of paper wrappers instead of plastic. And so they were able to comply, I think.
Legislator Ryder? Director Ryder, would you like to add anything?
Yeah.
I'll say they complied or they left. So, like, in the town of Ulster, there was Sonic, who they're notoriously with their styrofoam cups, and they're no longer there. But
they complied or they left.
So I was just going to continue by saying that, you know, the next point, paragraph C, says no county facilities, county managed concessions, county sponsored events. I think that's great. I mean, and that's something we actually can enforce.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was going to say, if, you know, this gets pared back in some ways in its final form, I mean, I think that is part that should definitely remain, nice. Because it seems to me like that is something that we actually have control over.
Great. Well, I love the idea of a subcommittee, and I'll start working on that.
I think a subcommittee would be needed too.
Yeah. So I will move to postpone this resolution. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Against? Abstain? The resolution is postponed. Resolution number 178, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 4 of 2025, a local law providing for the protection and restoration of the Esopus Creek, Rondout Creek, and Walkill River in Ulster County, and providing for the rights of the residents of Ulster County to clean water and a healthy and productive ecosystem, to be held on Tuesday, August 19th, 2025 at 7:05 p.m. I'll start by saying that Legislator McCullough became a co-sponsor today of this resolution, and he asked me, why wouldn't we support a resolution that provides clean rivers for our constituents? So it made me want to have an open conversation, of course, but also it made me think of Legislator Stewart and your desire for access to rivers. I feel like we need pristine rivers to access, and to give teeth to the Green Constitution is the legislative intent of this. Legislator Wolf.
This is very well intended, and when I saw it on its face, I was like all for it. Walkill River is, you know, close to my, I fished and swam in that as a kid. But after hearing the county attorney's office reservations about how it might impact the county negatively going forward, as far as, and I'm not an attorney, but incurring different types of liability, unless those concerns were addressed, I wouldn't vote on it in favor of it.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? Legislator Nolan?
Yeah, I'm not sure whether we need to move this before we continue with discussion. So I would do that, move it for discussion.
And I will second. Oh, Donaldson, second.
But I concur with Legislator Walls, and I would answer Legislator McCullough's rhetorical question, which is, I would always want to stand for the high quality of our water and protect it. And I would not want to do that in such a way that it ended up costing Ulster County unpredictable amounts of money to do that if there were a way to do that without that downside. So I agree completely with the goal, and I don't think we're there yet in terms of crafting a law that gets us to that goal without putting it, exposing us to risk for liabilities that would otherwise probably go to the state, and that they have resources that are set aside for, you know, dealing with that. So this is a question to me of having the right tool to accomplish what we're trying to accomplish, and having the resources behind the tool. A proclamation of our appreciation for these bodies of waters might be where we could start, because I think that then that brings everybody together. But when you start saying that there's certain responsibilities and that the county now is taking these on, I think we would have to think that through and budget for that and have staffing for that we currently don't have. So it just gets way out beyond the ability to enforce it without those financial risks. And so that I applaud the intention, but I don't think we have in front of us something that's safe for the county to enact in order to try to give force to that intention.
Thank you. I just wanted to briefly respond to Legislator Walls. You mentioned fishing and swimming in the Walkill. It's now the dirtiest of the three rivers that are mentioned, and it's dangerous to eat those fish now because of fecal matter and detergents.
I got a pool now.
Yeah, good. Deputy Executive Lavelle.
Thank you.
Actually, you're on the list, Legislator Green.
Just wanted to again restate some comments that I offered last month, which again, you know, I agree with everyone that the intent here is very laudable. And I think in clear, you know, protecting the quality of the surface water and groundwater, other environmental resources is something that everybody agrees with. However, again, the county attorney is strongly advising against this, as the teeth that this local law would give is really offering the opportunity for a suit to be brought against the county to reach these goals, of which many are way beyond the county's purview, including different types of water quality regulations, also other things regarding the free-flowing courses of water, whereas a citizen could even sue about the existence of a dam on a river, of which the county has no control over. So again, this does not expand the rights that a citizen has for suit in any meaningful way beyond the Green Amendment, other than to provide the mechanism to go after the county to enforce things of which we are not set to regulate, enforce, or take action on.
Does the executive attorney's memo mention specific examples of our exposure? Because I just heard Legislator Nolan talk about responsibilities that we don't want to have. Do we have specific examples that put us at risk for lawsuit? And why wouldn't we be suing the polluters who are putting all of the fecal matter and detergents in our rivers?
It puts us on the hook to then regulate and go after those when we don't have the regulations. So the pollution, as it currently stands, is a violation of the Clean Water Act. It's a federal act. It's also can be delegated to the state. You take something like point source pollution. So you have the NPDES, the National Pollution Elimination and Discharge Act, which is then delegated to New York State, and that becomes the SPEDES law that you have to work with DEC to, for example, a point source discharge like from a wastewater treatment plant that has to be tested daily to certain standards. That's federal law that's delegated to the state. Now, if they were to then sue Ulster County because they don't think that state or federal standard is helping enough for the water body, puts us in the middle to then become the responsible party when, again, we don't have the regulatory authority or the means to then go and force some new additional standard on that pollution.
Thank you. When I was on the Environmental Commission in the town of Rochester, we worked with Riverkeeper and citizen scientists to try and do testing along the Rondout. I think that's the intent of this, is to find where the sources are coming from and to say, maybe we shouldn't be putting this in the river. Why are we still relying on citizen scientists?
But effectively, it gives the right for then that person to sue us to remedy it.
That person, the citizen scientist?
Yep. Citizen scientist, another group, et cetera. It's not... and typically what those programs are doing, Riverkeeper, for example, you mentioned the Walk Hill. It was a lot of the data that Riverkeeper was able to collect on the Walk Hill that was then presented to New York State, who then changed the designation of the river. And that becomes changing the designation. You both get additional regulations, and you also get additional funding to then go and implement projects to look at water quality and additional testing from the state. So I think that's a very different model than what this presents.
Thank you very much. I just added you to the list right after Legislator Stuart Engry.
I was actually just going to echo the comments made by legislators Walls and Nolan, and then later by Deputy County Executive Laval. I just don't think that, if this puts us in legal jeopardy, and if we do not currently have the staff at the Department of the Environment, or again, it comes down to enforcement issues with me. And like I say, it's, as everyone has said, it's a very laudable goal. I just don't see how this is practical or realistic in moving forward.
Thank you. Legislator Green?
Yeah, deja vu, because we've been through this with legislator, former legislator Arner, and so many of the same issues were brought up. The intention, I think, is to bring home the Green Amendment and apply it locally or countywide. I just am wondering how this is different from the previous, given that we're hearing the same things from the attorney. I do think that the county has a role, particularly because with the state is not being proactive. It would be citizens group going to the state and saying, there's a problem in my community. And I do think the county has a role, but I'm just wondering, is there a way to address the legal concerns that keep coming up from the county attorney?
Thank you. Legislator Noll.
I think the one of the big main differences was that Legislator Arner was trying to address the Hudson, and this is narrowed down to focus on Esopus Creek, Roundout Creek, and Wallkill River in the county of Ulster. So by narrowing the scope, that was an attempt to reduce that. Yeah, it doesn't completely work though, because the issues about who has the legal obligation to enforce water quality laws and storm runoff is still comes into play, and it is the state, often delegated from federal. And it's not at the county level that we generally do this. So I would encourage the sponsors to consider withdrawing the local law and considering whether or not we can craft a policy that would, in cooperation with the Department of Environment, that would address the ways in which we support the state's enforcement of these water quality laws, and and maybe do some creative thinking about whether there's anything productive that Ulster County, that a county level can add to what in New York State is a pretty good set of laws, not perfect, but pretty good, with a lot of state level resources behind it. If we could do that, and maybe it even begins with just celebration of the inherent beauty and integrity of these water bodies. As long as we don't start to use language that makes them people that we then have to protect, or doesn't give them rights that, you know, we haven't fully thought through that our ability to protect, then I think we could all be very happy about that and maybe do some good with this. But I think we're going to keep bumping up against this difference between the authority and resources to address many of these issues, which have evolved over hundreds of years now, and do not reside with the county, and properly do not reside with us, because even for these three waterways, I think we could bankrupt the county if we became liable for enforcing every law that's on the books to protect them.
Thank you. I think that I took a lot of the facts out that Legislator Litz was asking about. I made the law much shorter, and I generalized in one paragraph about Native American peoples, and I think that they would see the river as having rights of people. And so we are doing something innovative and new. I think that one way I thought to address the liability is to call other municipalities. I have the whole section on Native American precedents, but also United States precedents of different municipalities. I'm going to call some of those within the next month and find out if they've had legal challenges or if it's been an issue for them. And then I will take no action. Director Ryder, did you want to say something?
I just have a question. It's not waste related, so I don't know why I'm stepping in here. You and I talked about this earlier, but when I read this and the one thing that comes to mind that if you're going to make any changes on this, like both the Wallkill, which has a Central Hudson Dam, and the Esopus, which has the Ashokan Reservoir, which is a man-made, how does this local law impact that? Could a resident sue and make Ulster County try to enforce the removal of the Ashokan Reservoir because there's language in here that says that it's supposed to evolve freely? So just stop.
Thank you, Director Ryder. I think no action will be better for than postponement. Thank you.
I think Director Doyle had a comment.
Director Doyle, yes, please.
With more trepidation, I think, than sense, I guess. That's actually a good quote, yeah. I think from my perspective, looking at this very, very broadly, the concern, I know the current concern gets expressed in terms of liability, gets concerned in terms of definition, but I think if you look at the heart of the Green Amendment, what it does and what it provides for is the questioning of the validity of the existing regulatory structure. And that's the real concern. The real concern here is the ability of residents and or others to sue the county or the county to sue others relative to the ability or the validity of the existing regulatory structure. Are the current limits correct in terms of the definitions that are in the Green Amendment? I think that's the real concern. The other thing I would say to you is that the county's not necessarily powerless here relative to influence. And the example I would give you is the work that's been done on the Lower Esopus. The work that's been done on the Lower Esopus essentially has been done not on the basis of essentially a local law, not on the basis of essentially the concerns expressed at a policy level. It's literally been the sense that there's a fundamental wrong here that's happening, and we needed to essentially move to correct it. And that's what's slowly going on in the Lower Esopus with respect to an interim release protocol. It's been going on with respect to new turbidity limits. It's been going on with respect to one of the resolutions in front of us tonight, a watershed quality coordinator, an order and consent. So if you look at that in terms of the ability essentially to do something, those are the kinds of actions I think that are really important for the county to consider moving forward as it tries to protect those rights of citizens and the rights of others and landowners along the creek to utilize it in a productive manner. So thinking about your investment in recreational opportunities, your investment in trail systems, your investment in testing of the waters, all of those things I think are as equally important as trying to write a local statute that essentially allows people to question the validity of the regulations. You can question that validity yourself. Do we really think that Cat Alum is the right way to go? And we've done that. I would just think that that's a better place to go forward than to try to look at trying to massage this local law into something that may be fundamentally problematic in terms of the county's overall liability.
Thank you very much. Okay, thank you. Resolution number 209, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute a service agreement with the Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency, Department of the Environment.
I'll move it for discussion.
Great. Do I have a second for discussion? Donaldson? Legislator Nolan.
I'd like to make a motion that we postpone this for a month.
Second. Stewart? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Again, opposed? Abstain? It's unanimous. Resolution number 273, opposing the establishment of a countywide landfill anywhere within the geographical boundaries of Ulster County, and urging the exploration of alternative locations and waste management solutions. Do we have a motion for discussion?
Move for discussion.
And a second.
I'll second.
Any questions, comments? Legislator Green.
I just want to say that I strongly oppose this constraint on our ability to implement sound solid waste management. It's a nut in my backyard, and it's the opposite of taking local responsibility.
Thank you. Legislator Nolan, and then Collins.
I think that this resolution is now a little bit outdated. So certainly some of the whereas clauses are outdated in terms of their reference to Woolworthing, since it's no longer the agency's intention to look at that site or those sites. And I found myself wondering if the I don't share Legislator Green's interpretation of what it means to be locally responsible. I do share her concern that this kind of broad brush gives us the appearance of not caring and seeing ourselves as somehow special relative to our neighboring counties, who also have some of the features, though not all of the features that are described here. So I think that an alternative could be to adapt this resolution into a letter to the executive, to the chair of the legislature, to the agency that expresses what are the things we care about in thinking about this. And I think encouraging a regional approach and maybe putting in language about an approach that is based on sound environmental considerations. This resolution cites a prior resolution in regard to the town of Plattekill that was put forward and said to be not going to set any kind of precedent, but exactly did set a kind of precedent. And so rather than constrain this whole issue either in one direction or the other, you know, we can't have a landfill or we must have a landfill, I'd rather move forward testing out the various places that good hydrological considerations and other considerations would point to as they come up and guided by the agency on that. And if that's the intent of this resolution, then I think it could be accomplished by a letter rather than as a resolution, or it's going to require some major rewriting of this resolution.
Legislator Collins.
Oh, just a quick, I haven't had a chance to look at this recently. Am I still a sponsor on this? And if so, I would like to not be a sponsor on this.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I just told you we're removed.
Wonderful.
Legislator Stewart.
One thing that I wanted to mention was that if we are looking at doing a regional landfill in a neighboring county, I think it would really kind of hamper our ability to negotiate with a neighboring county if we automatically say, oh, guess what, but you can't put it here. So for that reason alone, I would not be in favor of supporting this.
Any other questions, comments, or thoughts? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Opposed.
Abstain? You got that? Resolution fails. 2-5. Thank you very much. Resolution number 320. Amending the 2025 Ulster County budget to transfer funds within the Department of Environment to establish a staff position supporting watershed management implementation.
I'm very happy to move it.
Moved by Nolan, second by Stewart. And Legislator.
For discussion.
Yes. Legislator Stewart.
I just want to say that I'm really thrilled with this. This is something that I have been advocating for and pushing for since I was elected to this body. And so I'm really pleased that, you know, that this is before us, and I hope that we vote in the affirmative.
Thank you. Legislator Nolan.
I really appreciate the Department of Environment for stepping up. I don't think this was an easy decision, and I think it's stretching to make sure that this position gets funded and this work gets done, and I greatly appreciate that. I'd like to be added as a co-sponsor.
And I would like to be added as a co-sponsor, too.
Me too.
Legislator Green also, and Hewitt, and Donaldson, and LaBelle. Just kidding. I saw you put your finger up. Legislator Litz.
Yeah, I was just looking for some clarification. If you look in the financial impact, it says departmental income, $22,255 is an increase. And then there's a decrease of professional services of $22,254, a dollar difference. But why is departmental income under the cost of implementing this resolution?
Deputy Executive LaValle, do you know?
I just want to look at it.
Sure. I'll read my summary while you're looking. This amends the budget to increase the Department of the Environment for the purpose of creating and funding a new full-time staff position focused on the implementation and coordination of watershed management plan across the county, watershed coordinator, full-time CSA, $70,979. Legislator Nolan?
So my working hypothesis on this until Deputy Executive LaValle can illuminate it for us is that this was originally in the budget for professional services and fees, and so we're taking it out of that and we're putting it into the department's budget.
Thank you. Would you confirm that?
Yes, and the income is for the 50% of the position that would be provided by the Hudson River Foundation through their implementation fund, specifically towards the lower SOPIS portion of the duties.
Thank you. Legislator Litz.
So they're going to share $22,000 of the $70,000 cost of the position?
No, they have pledged more than that. However, the $22,000 is based on the budget remaining for the year. So although the position is $70,000, that wouldn't be the salary for the balance of the year.
So going forward,
yes,
like in next year's budget, it's going to be like a $71,000 budgeted position.
Right, with 50% coming from the Hudson River Foundation.
Okay, thanks.
I was under the impression it was $79,000, but I could be mistaken.
Could you say where the 50% is coming from?
It's coming from the Hudson River Foundation.
Any additional questions, thoughts? Legislator Nolan?
Oh, I just say that the reason the Hudson Valley Foundation has that money is that the New York City Department of Environmental Protection agreed in a consent order to provide for funding for this type of activities and protection in this outside of the Ashokan watershed area. And the Hudson River Foundation is the group that is managing those monies that the DEP is putting up.
Yes, thank you. Legislator Stewart?
And just following up on that, if I understand it correctly, it's basically these are penalties that were accrued by the City of New York for doing those
releases,
those turbid releases. So,
yeah, thank you.
With the order on consent, demanded that the New York City DEP pay money to the Hudson River Foundation for an implementation fund. It also provided money to Ulster County to help create the Lower SOPIS Stream Management Plan, as well as do a couple other things like install the USGS gauge at Lamontville and some other projects.
Wonderful. Thank you. Legislator Litz?
So this matching portion of this position is only a one-shot deal, or is it going to be every year?
Director Doyle?
So we're currently in negotiations and have an agreement in principle relative to the funding for this. It would be $150,000, $50,000 a year over 3 years. And that application has, and conversations have been taking place with the Hudson River Foundation. Those folks on the lower Esopus that are aware of this are well aware of this as well. And I would also note that the notice of funding availability is out for the remainder of I think $500,000 of that money is available. There's a total of $3 million, I'd like to say, available for the lower Esopus on the order of consent.
There is a backup. There is a letter in the backup from the Hudson River Foundation providing that information and also pledging their support.
Wonderful.
Yay.
Do I have a motion to adopt the resolution?
I would make that a motion to adopt the resolution.
To adopt. Stuart, Nolan, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Resolution passes unanimously. Okay. Resolution number 321, establishing capital project number 736, site ready services for 2025, electric vehicle charging stations, amending the 2025 to 2030 capital improvement program, amending the 2025 capital fund budget, Department of Public Works. This is establishing capital project number 736, EV charging stations in the amount of $1,485,000. It is anticipated that rebates in the amount of $739,440 will be received. Is there any discussion or questions?
I'd like to move it for adoption.
Move for adopt. Do I have a second? Nolan, Stewart, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Resolution passes unanimously. Resolution number 323, authorizing the Planning Department to submit an application to the New York Environmental Facilities Corporation, NYSEFC, via the NYSEFC Customer Portal, Department of Planning. Director Doyle, you want to give us a brief summary? Or I can.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Authorizes the director of the Ulster County Planning Department to submit an online application through the NYSEFC Customer Portal to the New York Environmental Facilities Corporation Green Resiliency Grant Program for funding up to the grant's maximum award amount.
I'd like to move it for adoption, and I'd like to be added as a co-sponsor.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstain. Resolution passes unanimously. Resolution number 324, authorizing the Department of Budget to submit various grant applications via the New York State Consolidated Funding Application, Department of Budget. Any discussion or questions?
I move it for adoption.
Second is Green. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstain. Resolution passes unanimously. That was the last resolution. Any new business? Yes, of course. Resolution number 353, appointing members to the Recycling Oversight Committee. I can review the members quickly. Manager Joe Green, EES representative. Mayor Steve Noble, City of Kingston. Jonathan Kaplan. Sunali Shant Sikand. Poppy Cannon Reese at large. Vincent Joseph Mao at large. Claudia Joseph at large. And Aaron Anowin, Town of Rochester Supervisor.
I'll move it for adoption.
I just had a quick question. Where were these names generated? That's my through what I mean. I don't recall having this discussion. So,
Legislator Green, can you answer that question?
I would imagine the chairperson.
Chair of ROC. Director Ryder.
I know some of these are appointments because of their certain, but the at-large ones, I think, are all members, for the most part, that you interviewed for the UCRA board.
Right.
And they had indicated
a desire to serve on another agency. But then other ones have their own appointments.
Okay, so I'm sorry.
So the town supervisors make an appointment and recommend it to you. The city of Kingston has an appointment. They recommend the mayor. There's certain ones that by title have to be appointed, and doesn't mean that you have to choose these specific people. Like, I think the municipal recycling officer one is left blank because you still don't have somebody to appoint in that position. You may need to recruit out of them.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Resolution passes unanimously. And now, any new business? Old business? Do I have a motion? Thank you, Legislator Litz. All those in favor? Adjournment? Aye. Can I have a second on adjournment?
Second.
Thank you.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? We have adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.